Hey, AfterBuzzers, welcome to an all-new Twin Peaks After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we're going to be breaking down Season 3, Part 15. We have Lex back in the house, our full OG panel. It's going to be a good one, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everyone. Again, for tuning into our Twin Peaks After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. I'm your host, Sam Davidson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at SamD43. I am joined by my three awesome co-hosts. Please introduce yourself. Let us know where we can find you on social media.
I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael. Excited to be back above the convenience store with all of you guys.
And I am Michael Shirley. And this is the first time I've ever... And like I've been hosting for like 10 years, and this is the first time I've ever done it with one eye. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Michael X Shirley.
Hey everybody, I'm Lisa Mason Lee, and you can find me everywhere at Lisa Mason Lee. Hey, and if I were a stripper, I would dance to Sharp Dressed Man.
We all have our stripper song.
Yeah,
we all definitely do. And of course, guys, don't forget to follow AfterBuzz TV at AfterBuzz TV and all social media platforms. Rate, review, subscribe. We usually really like hearing your feedback. So let's get into tonight because it was a lot of fun. We saw some familiar faces.
Yes, we did.
Starting off with Nadine.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Michael's eye patch.
I was like, I've been carrying this eye patch like around all season, just waiting for like the right time. And today I was just, oh, my gosh. If you guys could have seen me. When she's like walking with that shovel, I was just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Definitely my favorite episode of this season.
Really?
I loved this episode.
What did you
even
think?
Even beyond her.
Beyond her, yes. It was brief, you know, but yeah. We got it. What did you think, Lex?
Oh, man, my emotions. So I was not... Look, y'all know I feel no shame about the fact that movies and TV frequently make me cry. I was not prepared to cry this much this evening. This wrecked me in a number of places, and it began with what we're talking about, with Nadine finally going to Ed. Whatever she's been taking away from Dr. Jacoby's message has really enabled her to make some positive, non-selfish change. Ed is free, and then he gets to go be with Norma, and it's an amazing resolution to plot threads that we've just picked up in this new iteration, and also plot threads that have been in play since the original incarnation of the show 20 plus years ago. Like, I loved all of this stuff.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It brought back a lot of the original season. I think sound might be on your computer, Lisa.
Oh,
there it is.
Jeez, that's what she was pointing at.
It's just feedback, you know, guys? What can we say? But, you know, Nadine comes with the gold shovel, a la Dr. Jacoby, and I'm still unsure of what the significance of all of that is. Lex, you know.
I couldn't tell you.
Really? No?
It's a great way. I feel like it's a great way for Dr. Amp to just sell the metaphor. And it's like, you got to monetize somehow. So it's like, here's a nice trinket. But I love that Nadine is carrying it with her all the way. It's like, this is a symbol of the new person I am. So I'm just going to keep it over my shoulder.
She was like, I could have turned back. I walked all the way here. I thought good and hard about this. And I was like, wow. Way to go, Nadine. It took her long enough, but...
Right.
And also, the turnaround on that was really quick. He literally, like, goes, gets in the truck, and then drives to Norma.
And I love his reaction, which he's just like, yeah? Are you sure? You're going to regret that you said this tomorrow, most likely, but the second she assures him it's fine and pieces, immediately goes to the double R.
What did you think, Lisa?
It's just so weird that people stay in relationships until someone decides, you know, I'm out of here. It's like you drop your ball and chain and then you have permission to go.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good guy to a fault.
Absolutely.
And, you know, she finally set him free. I still, you know, want to know exactly what triggered this besides... Dr. Jacoby and, you know, the gold shovel. She's shoveling herself out of the shit.
I think she wants to trade up.
Yeah. I think she's into Jacoby and she's over Ed.
Okay. I like that theory.
I wonder if she's always known that she was so horrible to him or if this is just, like, her being, like, having an epiphany.
I don't know. I honestly have no idea. We'd love to know what you guys think in the live chat. Lisa is taking a look at that. And we also, of course, Ed goes to Norma, and before they have their beautiful reunion, Walter comes in
And she tells him that, you know, she wants to sell him basically all of the double R's, or not all the, you know, all of the Norma's, what are they calling it? Norma's?
Norma's double R.
Yes, Norma's double R. Norma's double R, except for that one. And, you know, he has this thing for her. And it's been evident. I thought they were dating. I feel like I did it at one point.
They played it ambiguously, but with enough there that, yeah, I started to think the same thing.
Yeah. And but then when we see, it's like we see him right after Ed comes in and tells her that, you know, he wants to be with her and Nadine said he could. And then she's like, hold on a second. And he's devastated.
Yeah, I felt like Lex probably was crying at that point.
What? Not full on tears, but oh man, like my heart was breaking.
Did you guys think she was going to be with Walter and be like, no? Or did you think?
For a second I did. Yeah. But then obviously that didn't happen.
Yes. They're getting married. I mean, you know, apparently.
And the use of the Otis song, too, throughout this scene, which dips when the mood gets a little bit lower and picks up again every time a big, like, sweeping happy moment occurs. When Ed first enters, when Norma reveals that she wants to sell her shares in the franchise, and then, of course, when Norma comes back and meets Ed at the counter. Really like the use of that song as almost like a score.
Yeah, I did, too. And in a way, this episode, it was a lot of fan service, and it, you know, we're getting ready to tie this all together. I mean, what, we have three episodes after this, yeah. So this was kind of a conclusion to a story that we have known for a very, very long time.
Very and satisfying. Yeah. I feel like all so of us on happened. The panel wanted this.
Yeah. It was a nice, happy ending for that story. I mean, there's still a lot of time left. We don't know what's going to happen.
I guess that means that Nadine and Mike are not a thing. Because we saw Mike in, what was it, the first or second
one of the
episode.
Early ones, yeah.
And so that was making me think maybe there's something between them, but I don't know. Oh, we haven't seen him in a while, and I don't feel like they would just throw him in for just a second for no reason. Don't you guys feel like he's probably got to pop back up for some purpose? Like, if not to bug Bobby or...
Yes, I do.
I don't know.
I feel like it would be a little strange if, yeah, we only ever see him in that office declining Steven's job application.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I mean, these 18 hours that at the end of the day that we're getting are so jam-packed with so much stuff, and I have a feeling I'll be rewatching it once it's over, so we'll actually understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Then, of course, we have Mr. C going to see Philip Jeffries.
Oh.
Wow.
Mm. Okay, so from an objective point of view, do you guys think that using David Bowie in this way... I mean, okay, I personally loved it. I thought it was very interesting, though, how someone has passed away. And, you know, they're still kind of using, like, was that his voice? What was it?
The voice from, so yeah, of course, like, of course, in a world where we can't actually bring David Bowie back for scenes, sure, he's evolved into a big electric tea kettle. Why not? but that actor who was essentially doubling his Philip Jeffries voice is an actor named Nathan Frizzell.
Yeah.
So it's obviously it's Bowie in the flashback footage. But yeah, it's another actor doing the voice of the big tea kettle thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was trying to remember. I know what David Bowie sounds like when he sings, but his speaking voice, I'm like,
Well, he's not country at all.
No.
And Philip Jeffries is about as country as it gets.
A very southern thing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just trying to think of the times we did meet him on the show and what he sounded like. But I thought it was cool, you know.
It's so, in a world where the man from another place, the arm evolved into an electric brain tree thing, I'm sure
and
I'll
Garland
go with
Briggs, the big head in the sky. I feel like Philip Jeffries probably got it best.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, that I was thinking about is how they're finding creative ways to incorporate the characters played by actors who have passed on. I mean, we've seen the likeness of Don Davis with the floating head. And obviously, Major Briggs is a big part of the mythology of this season. They used Frank Silva's likeness in that bubble. So I think using that flashback footage from Fire Walk With Me is a great way to fold different parts of the mythology together while also keeping David Bowie as a presence.
Was it Fire Walk? I mean, you would know better than I would, but was it Fire Walk With Me or was it from Missing Pieces? That flashback.
Both. I know he has that line in the
it's like a longer version in Missing Pieces.
Yeah, in Missing Pieces, he sits down at the desk and puts his head down.
And you actually get to hear more of what he talks about being above the convenience store, which is where Mr. C goes. In the movie, it's all like electrical interference, distortion, static images.
Yes. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first time that we've seen this convenience store and that it's actually not really there. physically. I mean,
that it
wasn't there, but that it was kind of going in and out of existence,
right.
Or
well, after they were done doing their business there.
Well,
and after...
right. In this episode, you know, we see that like it's not technically in this realm.
Right.
Yeah, we
it's
were thinking
there.
Originally it could have been Big Ed's gas farm, like way back in the day.
Right.
But this
right.
is totally different.
It's like a time warp.
I noticed in the comments last week, a lot of fans were talking about. I noticed it most when they were talking about the Bang Bang Bar and the Roadhouse, saying that what if these are like two different dimensions and like the Roadhouse is actually different than the Bang Bang Bar.
In my head, I do get very confused between those two things and kind of understanding. There is something, you know, I don't know, I do think there might be something with some overlapping, whether it's times or whether it's just, I don't know if dimensions is the right word, but you guys know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're definitely starting to get very strong hints now that a lot of the scenes that we're being presented with are not necessarily being presented in chronological order, for mm-hmm. example. Like, we see, jumping ahead slightly, but we see Mr. C send the Las Vegas text in this episode. Mm-hmm. And it's entirely possible maybe he's just blowing up her phone again, but I would think that we're meant to infer that when she got it, Diane got that text a few weeks ago, that that's the same exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's a very good catch.
I think so.
Absolutely.
But I'm wondering, does Diane know who Mr. C, like, know
right.
what Mr. C looks like?
Especially
that's
right,
my big
like,
question.
Yeah. It's especially if Janie E, as we learned last week, is her half sister, mm-hmm. and she knows that she's married to a Dougie Jones. Mm-hmm. It would almost be stranger if she had no idea whatsoever that he has the same face as Cooper. There are definitely
right.
questions that I
yes.
have about that as well.
But she saw him. There was that episode where she went to jail.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah. And how does right? How does that track with all of the other questions that are being raised now?
I think she does. I think there's a reason that she's terrified of him, you know, Dale, Dougie, Mr. C, whatever it is. And I think Diane is probably one of the smartest of the bunch. She, you know, she knows a lot of what is going on. But I want to go back to this scene of what we see when Mr. C speaks to Philip Jeffries. So mm-hmm. that was what we saw. Was it what we saw with, like, the ladder and NATO and all that? Was that when he goes out on the roof? Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It looks familiar to me. Maybe it's just...
Oh. No, I didn't see it in that way.
I do see the resemblance, though, between the big tea kettle thing and the top part, like the hat of the little
yeah.
station that was floating in space.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe it's, you know, just David Lynch again trying to throw us off, but I caught on to it and it definitely alerted me, like, is this finally explaining something, kind of?
Yeah. A couple people in the chat, too, pointing out when Cooper or Mr. C shows up, goes through the portal above the convenience store, mm-hmm. tells the woodsman he's looking for Philip Jeffries, and the dude flips a switch. In the electricity, we see finally the return of the jumping man, the dude with the white face and the beak mask.
Right.
And it looked like, and I had to backtrack again to catch this, but it looked like Sarah Palmer's face, possibly superimposed over his for a couple of moments.
Over whose face?
Right. The jumping man, when you see him
see
really
that.
Briefly.
That's really
There's
cool.
definitely
see
a
that?
Face. I think it might be Sarah Palmer. I would have to go back to confirm, but I'm pretty sure that it looked like Grace Zabriskie to me a little bit.
To go back and see it.
I know. I watched it twice, actually. Aren't you proud of me? I literally, before this, you guys, I banged this out twice. Bang, bang, get it? But yeah, I didn't see that. I want to talk about Judy.
We talked about Judy.
God. This
after
I really liked.
25-ish years, we finally talked about Judy.
And okay, so basically, Jeffries, when him and Cooper are talking, he says he doesn't want to talk about Judy. Then, you know, Mr. C's, who is Judy? And he said he's already met Judy.
Well, we all know who Judy is, right?
Not really.
Well, if they didn't retcon it, you're referring to this idea
Judy
that she's...
would be Josie's twin sister.
Right.
But we don't have that. That's not a fact, though, is it?
It's in the secret history of Twin Peaks, isn't it? Like in a...
It was... I thought it was that letter she wrote.
I know there's that letter, but right. I thought she was referred to in the secret history of Twin
it's,
Peaks.
It's been
like
referenced a couple of places outside of the show itself. And if they haven't retconned it, I still don't think it's impossible that NATO, who is now that's sitting in the jail cell is possible.
I was getting to that.
Because even though we know her as NATO currently, we've seen already a bunch of times this season how some of the names in the credits have been placeholders. Yeah. So it's still totally possible. And what I've seen some people talking about that I think maybe adds some credence to this theory is in Fire Walk With Me, when Bowie is talking about how we're not going to talk about Judy, you see the monkey, like under the mask, you see the monkey. And I believe the monkey says Judy. And NATO is sitting in that jail cell making what sound to me like monkey noises.
Yes.
Oh.
Before we get to all of that, though, we have to talk about Mr. C. And, of course,
Richard
Dickhorn. Wow.
So, I mean, okay.
It's official.
Yeah.
Audrey's son, he admitted to it.
Mm-hmm. He's his dad, right?
It would be weirder if he wasn't.
Really great way to meet your dad.
Yeah, it's like, hello, Dick,
what
I'm
a
your
warm
father.
Welcome.
I mean, he would have murdered him if he wasn't his son. I think
Mr. C knew who he was the second he saw him. Mm-hmm.
Was it necessary for him to beat the crap out of him?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I guess somebody needed to. A very, very abusive father. Not a good father. Okay, yeah. I'm not saying anybody
He's
should
a
do
shitty
this.
Dad.
But, you know, if a son or child tried to kind of go at the father, and be like, let me put you in your place. Don't ever do that to me again.
Well, I believe it's probably the first time he's met him.
Yeah.
So they don't really have, like, a father-son relationship.
Well, but not for Richard, but for Mr. C, he clearly
cares about anyone.
Then why did he let him live? Is my question.
He's gonna use him. Probably.
Yeah. Somehow. Yeah. The last thing he says is, "We'll talk in the car."
Right.
Which who about what?
Yeah.
Putting him
Audrey.
Up to something.
And I mean, he wanted to verify. He's like, "Who's your mother?" You know.
Right.
He already knew that though.
Well,
I feel like it was a
tip of the hat to us as an audience,
maybe.
You know, to kind of just verify that this is what is going on.
When it seems like for sure that even if Mr. C is onto the fact that this may in fact be his offspring, Richard still seems completely unaware. He didn't recognize Mr. C at the farm as his dad. He actually recognized him as Cooper, as an FBI agent.
Yeah, exactly. Which brings me a little bit back to something I skipped over with Mr. C and Philip Jeffries, when Philip Jeffries essentially thinks that he is Cooper.
Yes, and I feel like I saw some people talking about it. It's like, was this a reveal? Has Mr. C actually been the real Cooper all along? I don't necessarily buy into that. I feel like it was pretty clear. Even in the finale of the original series, when he smashes his head on the mirror and is babbling about how's Annie,
yeah.
I think it's clear that Mr. C and Cooper share memories. So I read that line as just Philip the tea kettle confirming for himself that you are, in fact, who you say you are.
What do you guys think was with the numbers when he was like, do you talk to Judy yourself? And all these numbers started floating around. Do you think they're coordinates or do you think it's... I couldn't.
You're the number guy.
It's not that I couldn't, but I didn't write down the numbers. And I couldn't really figure out their order. So I was wondering, could it have something to do with the trailer park and us seeing that flash, you know, with those numbers? Because it looked like it was about five or six numbers.
Possibly, because that is a little bit before we see the scene with Steven. And do we know this other girl, this red-haired girl
he's
with?
Yes, Kirsten Hayward.
Well,
is insane to me, you guys, how much she looks like Donna did in the original run. Like, when she was freaking out, I was like, her face, man. They look like sisters. And I'm so glad that she's, like, getting in on all this.
But
I was shocked.
We don't know the character.
Oh, my gosh.
We know... Listen.
Weird, that character is Donna's sister, Gerson Hayward, who plays the piano for everyone in the Hayward house.
I think in the season two premiere.
They showed her twice, at least, in this episode so far. In the apartment building.
On the stairs.
There was like a gunshot or something, and they all like, they turn around really quick or something, right?
Well, I just remember the scene where Becky goes and shoots up the door in the apartment complex.
She's hiding out
with Steven in the stairwell.
Right.
Okay, that's right. Guys, there's so many people to keep track of. It's
crazy. I didn't even notice that she was with Steven in the stairwell. I just noticed her in the stairwell. So, it's hard. Everything goes by so quickly.
And they keep throwing a ton of names and new pieces of information.
Yeah.
And now it's like, even when we know what characters we're looking at, Now, yes, it seems like they're both tripping their faces off on Sparkle, maybe, presumably.
I think so.
But what some of what they're talking about before it descends into even further madness, Steven's talking about what he did, and Gersten's telling him, you didn't do anything, did it.
I think I know what happened.
What do you think?
Please tell.
I think he killed her.
That's what I started to think about.
He killed who?
Margaret Lannerman's, like, you know.
Becky.
I think it's all happening again now.
When did that happen?
Well, we don't know
why
that
do you
she's
think
dead.
They were in the forest freaking
right,
out.
So,
I bet he killed her.
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we didn't see anything leading up to that. It would have just, because remember last time we saw Becky, wasn't she at the diner talking to her parents?
I think last time we saw her was there was a phone call between her and Shelley where she says she's worried because Steven's been missing for 2 days.
And she came in for pie.
Which also felt like it may have been slightly out of sequence. So I don't know if this is something that is actually going to pay off in the way we're speculating.
Yeah,
but
just
if
because
it does,
we haven't seen Shelley die doesn't mean she hasn't.
That's true.
Or not Shelley.
Becky.
Sorry.
I know what you mean.
That's true, but I also don't want... I mean, Laura Palmer lived on,
you know. They're not going to let Becky die yet, I don't think.
Well,
there's only three
episodes
left.
No.
Two weeks.
She needs a better death.
I agree, but I also think about when we started Twin Peaks season one. You know, Laura Palmer was dead.
Yeah. Before
and,
it even started.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Good point.
It's happening again. Like,
yeah.
What is happening? Wouldn't it be
I just don't
like
want her
the
to
town
be knocked off yet.
Rallying behind, you know, someone they were, you know, everyone knew who died?
I mean, it's not exactly how I imagined it. Sorry, guys. Our air conditioning is
it's
not working
warm
exactly.
In here.
So
it's hot in
here. If we look a little sparkly, it's not because we're vampires from Twilight
we're
or anything.
On Sparkle.
Or we're on Sparkle.
We're turning gold.
Yes.
But it would to what you're saying, though, it would make a lot of sense as a way to, if we lose a member of this community of either our OG cast or our new cast, it is a great way to bring our entire ensemble together, much in the way that Laura's funeral did that back in the original run.
This is true.
Yeah, and, you know, what we can presume, Steven kills himself.
I feel it, right? Like, that's what it
he shot straight
sounds
up in the
like.
Air.
But it also, it's like, I've watched enough TV, right? And I'm sure you guys have, too, where I think we've been trained as TV audiences to think if we don't see a body, they're probably not dead. So this could definitely, I think, could go either way.
And that could have been out of sequence, too. He could have killed the man in the forest that saw him. That did, you know, like, that could have, you don't think it could have been out of sequence? Because, I mean, the next scene, he's walking up to the trailer park and says, oh, the guy lives in that one. I mean...
I think he was trying to tell him, like, this guy just blew his brains out.
But that guy
out.
Doesn't live in that trailer. He lives in an apartment complex, Steven.
Well,
so I
saw,
know they're
I think,
not talking about Steven living in this
trailer.
But
isn't that the trailer that he shares with Becky?
Yeah. I thought they were talking about it.
I thought she had a trailer, and I thought he lived in an apartment building, but maybe that's Gretchen's place.
I think it's Gretchen's, the way
I
read it, now that I'm thinking about it, the way I'm reading it is I think they share the trailer, and the apartment that Becky shoots the door of is a third party. Maybe it's Gersten's, maybe it's someone else that she knows
really
where to
have
go.
A home. He's basically just staying with these
like
women.
Living
off of,
yeah.
Fun fact though, the man who sees them in the woods with the little dog is series co-creator Mark Frost.
That's right.
Also,
I did not know that.
Maybe my eyes were deceiving me, but I watched it twice and it looked like when he emerges from the woods and he comes around that one trailer, he's definitely coming around the one trailer, but I thought, maybe I'm crazy, I thought I saw a bit of a dissolve in effect on him, which could just be like, we know the woods have magic and power in them. I'm not necessarily saying that Mark Frost is playing some type of spirit dog walker, but I'd have to go back and double check that to be sure.
Spirit dog walker. I love that. Okay, so then after that, we see James, and we get this Renee, Jessica Zor, and her husband Chuck, and they are at the Roadhouse. There's the... When was the last time we saw the guy with the gloves?
Sykes was... That was last week, I believe.
Yeah,
when
Freddy.
He tells, yeah, Freddie Sykes. When he
Rubber
tells
fist.
When he tells James his superhero origin story.
Yeah,
I told you it was gonna. He was going to have a superhero moment.
Yeah.
He was just like, dunk.
Yeah.
That
and
really cool.
I mean, I don't know why James, like, did that.
this seemed like he's got... They talked about, I think, the first time we saw James, Shelley was talking about how he had an accident and he's been a little bit off since then.
Yeah.
This felt like he truly did not know how to handle himself in that situation at all, mm-hmm. in a way that maybe is tied to that, and maybe James is just a super awkward dude.
I just thought he was being nice and, like, maybe trying to piss the guy off a little bit, but...
Well, it does make sense, you know, if there's kind of something wrong with him a little bit mentally, that he's just, you know,
doesn't know how to react properly.
Yeah, doesn't exactly know how to approach people in the appropriate way anymore. But, yeah, I mean, Chuck is not doing well. He's foaming at the mouth and...
Like, what happened
you ever hit
when
someone so hard?
Foaming at the mouth.
Like, did he fry their brains with the punch?
Right.
Also, both punches, when he punched both of them, there was interference with the jukebox.
Yes.
Like, almost as if it sent out a tiny little EMP.
Yeah. Well, that didn't surprise me.
Did you hear that? I heard that.
Oh, yeah. You guys, I even hear it now. I swear, every time we come in here, I can hear interference. But they get taken to jail, and that is when we see Nato again. And like you talked about, the noises that everyone is kind of making in there. Let's just go back to that. Mm-hmm. And what is this, a distress call? You know, what are we making of all of this?
I think she's on the wrong planet, the wrong plane, and she is just squawking.
I don't know, you guys. I'm gonna leave this up to Lex to analyze.
I can only guess. I mean, we're getting closer to the end and we're seeing how threads are starting to converge, so I definitely don't think that it's an accident that James and Freddie end up in these jail cells, mm-hmm. especially 1 week after Freddie talked about the fireman, how I told him to go to Twin Peaks, you'll find your destiny there. I think certainly no coincidence that Nato is there at the same time. I wasn't here last week, so I don't know if you guys talked too much about it, but I'm leaning towards believing that this beat up drunk in the cell is the Billy we keep hearing about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
What would Audrey find in him if that's the same Billy?
So, well, look at her husband. Jeez Louise.
I don't know, but this Billy guy
is
nasty.
Real cat.
Well,
nasty.
I mean, maybe before he got that way.
Yeah, yeah. He looks like... funny to me when they brought the boys in and they were like, oh, James says, are they okay? And they were like, they're in intensive care. And I'm thinking, why isn't this Joker in intensive care? Because he looks so messed up.
He's beat up.
Like, he can't even keep the spit in his mouth.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's something definitely weird going on there, and I don't know what part James is going to play in this.
Who knows, right, if he's got a greater role than just finding a way to get Freddy more involved.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely think, again, and we see, like, this guy who may or may not be Billy, the repetition thing he keeps doing, which we're seeing with Dougie, I think these pieces are all tied together. And again, it's no accident that we're starting to place all of these people connected in some way to these other forces in one place.
Yeah. I don't ever really feel like James has really had a purpose, like, at all in the story.
Then why is he still alive?
Well, kind of what he was saying, I think he's around, has been around his whole life just to make sure he was friends with Rubber Fist.
Oh my God. That is that. Because
he's supposed to be here. No, yeah. Why is James supposed to be here to play that stupid song again? No. He's there to wrangle them in. Same world together.
I guess. I don't know. I want him to have a bit of greater significance. Before we move on to the next storyline, we have a show that we would love to tell you guys about. I love it. I've been watching it for a while.
Yeah, if you guys are watching us live, or if you're not, you're checking us out after the fact, you may have noticed that you didn't pay anything to check out our show, and we're really happy to be able to bring you guys this content every week free of charge. The reason we're able to do that is because we have a whole bunch of really great sponsors. Sponsors like Annie's, Lea Remini, Scientology, and The Aftermath. It is their Emmy-nominated groundbreaking docuseries, and it's returning for season 2 with new episodes Tuesdays at 9, 8 central on A&E. Lea Remini, Scientology in the Aftermath, follows Lea Remini along with high-level former Scientology executives and church members as they delve deep into shocking stories of abuse, heartbreak, and harassment experienced by those who have left the church and spoken publicly about their experiences. This season, Lea Remini continues her quest to give voice to the victims of the Church of Scientology. The series also explores accounts of former members whose lives have been significantly impacted by the church's practices. Remini is helping people take action, turning survivors into fighters, revealing truths, and seeking justice. catch up on episodes on the A&E app and aneTV.com. I'm looking forward to this. I said the last time we talked about this show on this show, I think Leah Remini is insanely cool. What she's doing is really brave, and I'm glad that she's out there giving a voice to everybody else.
Super scary, super dangerous.
Yeah.
What I really want to see is her sit down with David Miscavige, who's like the leader of Scientology. That
would not be an
interview. Oh my God, I would love it.
Well, guys, definitely check it out. I want next to talk about there's these two scenes that were, I was like, okay, what's going on here? So we have Randall Headley, I think it is, and Wilson. They're calling in Dougie and Janie E for questioning, but the kids are not happy. And he's like, how many kids? There's several kids. And, I mean, tell me if something just flew over my head, but I'm like, you know.
I don't know what those kids were about.
I guess. Didn't they reference there are multiple Douglas Joneses in the greater Las Vegas area? So I guess they picked the wrong one out of the hat, I guess. But I love, I was dying at the delivery of when he's reacting to kids plural and he's like, kids?
Yeah.
And repeats it.
Excellent. Oh, I love it when they open the door.
Yeah.
And the kids are just watching. It's like this menagerie of children.
Yeah, it's like, that's not him. But then we get Chantal, who goes in, and, I mean, she just shoots.
It ain't no straight thing.
Straight up, whacks Duncan Todd.
Yeah. And, I mean, it was really funny.
She's super annoyed that she had to go back.
Yeah, and she hears him, like, dying. She goes, oh,
she's hungry. She wants to get out of there.
She wants her french fries. At first, I was like, is she speaking in code? But I was like, no, she just wants her french fries. She actually just wants her french fries.
What a simple girl.
Yeah. But it was, like, Sam, you were just saying you thought it was funny. And it was, because it is so out of nowhere and unexpected that, yeah, I had the same reaction. I started laughing. Yeah.
Every time I saw that guy in a scene, it was, like, annoying, though. I was like, I don't like whatever he's probably up to. So I'm kind of glad. She popped him off.
Well, then we have Dougie and Janie E for real this time. Mm-hmm. You know, they're happy. She gives them some cake.
Of course.
Not pie. You know, not pie. It wasn't
pie. Well, that's her little treat to him. Like Was it a before or after sex?
Yeah,
it's a before sex treat.
Yes.
Almost. That's how she gets his mojo going.
I'm wondering, too, is this still Sonny Jim's birthday cake? Like, has it just been sitting in the fridge for nobody but Dougie when he does good?
We don't really know how many days this has gone by. Good. So this might have just been, like, 3 or 4 days.
I do. I actually think there's really something to that. I actually think we're dealing with less than a week.
Yeah. I do, too, for sure.
I was thinking about that, too. And are you guys familiar with the film that they played?
Yes. One of my favorite movies ever.
What is it?
Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, of course. Yes. That's what it was. I was like, I know this movie, but I don't have time to, you know, look it up.
Yeah. Lynch has talked about it as being one of his favorites. And yeah, as we saw, like, that's where he took the name Gordon Cole. He's a big fan, as you've seen. He constantly lifts little elements from, like, the works of Billy Wilder, also Howard Hawks, and layers it throughout. So I like that they lampshaded the reference a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and but in when he's watching it, they say, get Gordon Cole, and, you know, we're thinking, what is going to bring Dale back to life, back to reality, and this seems that's what it was, because, you know, the whole team's back together, all of this, there's these parallels, and then, you know, he goes for the outlet.
I was going, no.
What are you doing?
With the fork. It's like a child. Don't do it.
It's like,
Janie E was like, I'm not going to get my sex. Oh my God. She was screaming.
Yeah. I saw somebody on Reddit, like I jumped on after the episode aired, and I saw somebody, a couple people talking about how he puts the fork into the neutral socket, so he probably should not have been electrocuted. So people were joking about how the Jones home is wired improperly. I think it's a little more likely that if he really shouldn't have been electrocuted, it's the electricity of the lodges essentially acting through this plug.
He could probably stick a fork in a dishwasher and he'd go electric.
It's just so deep. I mean, Reddit. Oh my God.
But I'm wondering, like, what do you guys think about, like, I feel like this could really go either way. Either he wakes up and he's possibly Cooper again.
Yeah.
Or what if he's just dead?
No, he's gonna wake up.
But can you imagine if next episode opens at a morgue and Janie E is crying over the body?
It's his funeral.
Maybe.
What if Becky and Dougie have a joint funeral?
Not this show.
A double feature funeral in Twin Peaks.
Well, we, you know, of course they cut away and end the scene when we're like, what the heck happened? For me, I thought, I was like, did something happen to Janie E? Because she screams, but we hear Sunny Jim still be like, Mom, is everything okay with what's going on?
She screamed because her idiot husband stuck a, like, stuck a fork in the outlet.
Yeah. I don't know. I picked something else up from that possibly, which was maybe she was affected by it somehow, but Sunny Jim wasn't. I don't know. You know, why be that dramatic if the electricity...
She's so dramatic.
Yes.
Come on.
She is very dramatic. She's very dramatic. Then, you guys, we get a very sad scene, both literally and figuratively, you know, with Hawk and Margaret,
this
Log Lady.
This messed me up.
Is this where it really came for you, the tears?
This messed me up. I thought, I mean, I want to know obviously what you guys think, but I thought this was an absolutely beautiful scene. And to watch Catherine Coulson play Margaret Lanterman, knowing that she is at the end of her life, Catherine Coulson herself knowing that her life is about to end, I thought this was incredibly powerful. And again, what a gift that we got as much of her work this season as we did, and what an even greater gift if she was going to pass away, which of course was a massive loss. It is so wonderful that we were able to say goodbye within the show to both the actress and the character.
Yeah, I thought all of that was really cool, really classy, very fan servicey, but also like very much like
it was weird. It was beautiful, but it was also just weird how her story was coming to an end and her life was coming to an end. You know, she was sick in real life, correct?
Yes.
So I don't know if in a way that was written as though they knew she actually was going to pass away soon, and you know this was a salute to her because
I think she had died before they even began filming.
I know she passed away, I think, at the latest, pretty early into production.
Yeah. Because I've been saying, I felt like they must have sought her out, and like she must have sought them out too.
Like, they're like, let's just get this in
now.
And it's a big, you know, it's a big loss for the Lynchverse family as well, because Catherine Coulson's been with him since Eraserhead. In real life, she was married to Jack Nance for the longest time, who played Pete. Mm-hmm. So she's been in the family.
Was, the guy in Eraserhead.
Yes, who was star. The yes.
Yeah, a lot of people don't recognize because of the hair, but that is Jack Nance is the star of Eraserhead.
But yeah, it's a big you feel the loss. I mean, you really feel the loss. But I thought if this had to happen, I thought it happened in the most touching, beautiful way possible. And yes, oh boy, did it wreck me.
I like how she said death is just a change, not an end.
Yes.
I liked how she said her log was turning gold. Mm-hmm. I was like, what does that mean? Does that have something to do with the gold balls, Laura Palmer?
That's
like,
what I thought it
had something to do.
Yes. And maybe that in a way means death. You know,
when the log turns gold.
Well, the significance of gold. That might signify death in some way.
Well, it seems like, yeah, like Michael, I had the same thought about the gold ball as well. And then, of course, when the little boy is run over by Richard, mm-hmm. Carl sees that mm-hmm. golden essence rising.
Yes.
So I think it does. It's connected to, if not death specifically, then certainly a pure spirit.
Yeah. Let's talk about Audrey and Charlie. I'm still not convinced that Audrey is actually walking in this world and alive.
For the first time this week, I started to think, oh, yeah, maybe.
Right.
I'm having a hard time with this one, too.
Well, okay, so she wants to go to the Roadhouse. And, you know, it's this whole fight. They talk about Billy. And, I mean, she just hates him. It's like she's stuck and he has to go with her. And she goes, I've always liked Billy better. And he's like, well, I'm not Billy. You know, in a way, are they kind of her overseers in this other, if she's dead, if she's in a coma, whatever it is, you know, are they kind of her, like, not guardian angels, but just people that are seeing her through this realm?
I feel like she is with us because she knows the goings on. She knows, you know, this Billy who other people are talking about. We're assuming that they're real people. They're not just some mm-hmm. sort of like fragment of some dimension or something. Unless what I was saying earlier that the fans were talking about in the comments about the Roadhouse and the Bang Bang Bar being like different places all in the same. But I don't know. I feel like she is on this earth because, she walks around, she talks.
Yeah.
And she knows everything that's going on, but I'm thinking maybe she's like has dementia or like is like schizophrenic, like something like or like agoraphobic. Like she's scared to leave the house. I don't know. I feel like it's a sickness.
I think there's probably an overlap. She's clearly, like, you know, dealing with some stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, like,
yeah.
Her reactions to everything, but so...
Really strange.
She kind of always has, though. Let's just say that. Yeah.
A little bit.
She's been through quite a bit. But did it feel to you guys, it reminded me of a lot of dreams that I have had, where you know in your dream what you're trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. and you are just whatever you're trying to do, you're not able to accomplish it. And it seems like, right. maybe it's not necessarily a dream, maybe she's still in a coma, maybe she isn't, but it's starting to feel to me more and more like she's definitely occupying some in-between space right now where for whatever reason, she can't leave. And a lot of people made quite a bit of the fact that Charlie uses the term threshold, mm-hmm. and they were reminded of the dweller on the threshold, which is something Hawk talks about near the end of the original run. And he says the dweller on the threshold is what his people use to refer to essentially your dark shadow self.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't know what conclusively to make of all of this, but I think, yeah, for the first time this week, I'm really starting to entertain the idea that she's in some type of in-between place.
We were talking a lot last week about dreams, so it really doesn't sound that crazy that this could be some sort of a dream, but what I would hate is if, like, the very end of the series, like, it's just Audrey wakes up, and she's, like, 16 again. And
Isla Mansfield said, Richard comments on her keeping pictures of Cooper, so I feel like she hasn't been in a coma his whole life.
Yeah.
That kind of...
Exactly.
I don't know.
And there's Billy, and there's Billy.
I'm leaning towards agoraphobia.
Well, I'm not sure, but I do know, though, that... What I believe is a connection, like we're talking about between the Roadhouse and the Bang Bang, is because she goes, I want to go to the Roadhouse, I want to go to the Roadhouse. The last scene is at the Bang Bang. And, you know, there's this girl. And, we see young girls at the Bang Bang, and typically bad things continue to happen.
In the old version, didn't it have a sign that said Roadhouse? And, like, I don't think we'd ever seen something that said Bang Bang Bar.
No, it was definitely there.
It was?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Okay.
When the Bang Bang Bar, like, I feel like nobody ever, it's clearly called the Bang Bang Bar. But
they're really
like,
pushing that name this season. They put it on t-shirts.
Yes.
We're getting close-ups of the sign. So
right.
I feel like they want us to acknowledge something different about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the difference between, like, Bang Bang Bar and the Roadhouse, I feel like is just a matter of saying, instead of naming the bar
the
you're
slang,
going to, just saying, like, we're going to go to the bar.
Yeah, exactly. On that note, guys, we only have about 2 minutes left. So let's get into predictions for, you know, next week, the rest of the season.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I wish it really did turn to gold.
I know, I'd sell it.
It kind of looks gold right now.
All right, do you want to start us off, Michael?
Well, one of my predictions came true. Norma and Big Ed are getting back together.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So I better be good about this one. I think we're going to see, maybe if not a lot, but a little bit. I think we might see Dr. Jacoby and Nadine maybe in like a loving embrace soon.
Yes.
And I think that, like we were saying earlier, I think Becky has been killed by Steven.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they were freaking out about
in
the woods.
All right. What about you, Lisa?
I kind of feel like we may see some run-in with Richard Horn, Dirty Dale, and maybe Audrey. I don't know.
That would make sense.
That could be crazy. And maybe a funeral.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody's going to die. Everybody mm-hmm. wants to see a funeral. We're all really twisted here.
Or a wedding.
Yeah. What? Who
Jennings
would get married?
And...
Maybe a red wedding.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or like, wouldn't it be amazing if we got a double wedding and it's Big Ed and Norma and Nadine and Dr. Jacoby?
I feel like that's something God. They would do.
My heart
definitely.
Would sing.
That sounds like something, yeah.
I think, I don't actually think we just watched Dale/Dougie off himself. I think we're starting to see them tying up a lot of these additional plot lines so that maybe not next week, but certainly in the 2-hour finale, we can focus on really paying off the entire, the series long Cooper story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking forward to. The rest is, I mean, I'm curious to know if they're going to pay off the Judy question, if it does turn out to be NATO. And I think it is worth pointing out that Mr. C seemed genuinely disturbed by this. You don't see Mr. C behave desperately or fearfully or admit that he needs something.
Right.
And it seemed like he was really shaken by this. So I'm curious to see how and if they pay that off.
Absolutely. All right. So I'm thinking that Laura Palmer is going to come back and she's going to be bringing Becky into kind of, you know, it's like, this is your life now. Like, you are me. And it's going to shadow itself in somehow. And I just want to give a shout out to the chat and everyone that has started to agree with my alien theory. I really wish you were here last week, Lex, when Sarah Palmer turned into an alien. Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I'm not crazy.
No, I think we have fun ribbing at you for it. But no, you're definitely correct.
The entire internet has fun at ribbing at me for it. It's a lot of fun.
But these are definitely visitors to our plane. They're definitely aliens in one sense or another.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, guys, thank you all so, so much for tuning in. We will see you next week. Lex, do you want to share with the folks?
Yeah, I got to let you guys know, unfortunately, I was traveling for work last week, and I'm going to be traveling for work for the last couple of weeks of this show, so I'm not going to be here with you guys, but I really want to keep talking to you about Twin Peaks. I want to hear your theories. I want to shoot. I want to spitball. I want to go back and forth with all of you. So follow me on Twitter. I am at TheLexMichael, and let's spend the last 2 weeks trading Twin Peaks theories. I'm going to be able to watch the show, just unfortunately not going to be able to be here in person. Also, check out Missing Out, which is a podcast that I do with Tari J. Miller, another host here at AfterBuzz, where we take pieces of pop culture that we've missed, show them to each other, talk about that, talk about art, cultural experiences. We have a lot of fun. I think the episode that's dropping this Tuesday is on F. Gary Gray's Set It Off, but next week we're releasing an episode all about Blue Velvet. So come if you want to hear us talk about another Lynch work. Check us out there, Missing Out Podcast, and I will see you guys around, hopefully on Twitter.
Where can everyone find you, Lisa?
Hey, everybody can find me at Lisa Mason Lee. And don't forget about our Rock Love Jewelry giveaway.
Yes.
That ends in a week. So just go to my Twitter at Lisa Mason Lee, retweet that tweet I put out, and you're entered in the contest.
Yeah, just scroll down our Twitter feed. You guys should be able to see it.
Yeah.
And I'm Michael Shirley. You can find me online at Michael X Shirley on Twitter and Instagram. And check out my new blog, ilovemichaelshirley.com.
You guys can find me, Sam Davidson, at SamD43 on Twitter and Instagram, SamDavidsonEntertainment.com. So glad we got Lex for the time that we did. You know, continue to reach out to him and us. And the three of us will see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
You're free.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.